So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 3rd chapter, text 10. Sukanya chayvanam rapyaha Patim paramakopanam Prindhayam asa chittapya Pramatanu vitidhi. Sukanya. The girl named Sukanya. The daughter of King Sakshariati. Chaivanam. The great sage Chaivanamuni. Prapya. After obtaining. Patim, as her husband. Paramakopanam,
who was always very angry.
Aprinneham,
asa,
she satisfied him. Chitakya,
understanding the mind of her husband.
Apramata,
Anuvrittibhi,
by executing services without being bewildered. Translation. Chaivanamuni was very irritable, but since Sukanya had gotten him as her husband, she dealt with him carefully according to his mood. Knowing his mind, she performed service to him without being bewildered. So you can repeat. Chaivanamuni was very irritable. For those of you who don't know what that means just a little stimulation as someone gets angry. Just a little. Prashanam's not on time or you're not sweet enough to him. He explodes. But since Sukanya had gotten him as her husband, she dealt with him carefully. According to his mood. Knowing his mind, she performed service to him without being bewildered. So purport by Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. This is an indication of the relationship between husband and wife. I don't know why you give me these verses. It must have been planned out or something like that. Yeah, you must have been planning it out. When he comes, we're going to give him this verse. Or get him in trouble. Report him to the sannyas ministry.
No, only the Guru Service.
Guru Service Committee. A great personality like Chaivanamuni has the temperament of always wanting to be in a superior position. Such a person cannot submit to anyone. Therefore, Chaivanamuni had an irritable temperament. His wife, Sukanya, could understand his attitude, and under the circumstances, she treated him accordingly. Now the heavy stuff. If any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand the husband's temperament and please him. This is victory for a woman. Even in the dealings of Lord Krishna with his different queens, it has been seen that although the queens were the daughters of great kings, they placed themselves before Lord Krishna as his maidservants. However great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders, and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. When a wife becomes as irritable as the husband, their life at home is sure to be disturbed or ultimately completely broken. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive, and therefore home life is broken even by a slight incidence. Either the wife or the husband may take advantage of the divorce laws. According to the Vedic law, however, there is no such thing as divorce laws, and a woman must be trained to be submissive to the will of her husband. Westerners contend that this is a slave mentality for the wife, but factually it is not. It is the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. In this case, we clearly see that although Chaivanamuni was not young, but indeed old enough to be Sukanya's grandfather, and was also very irritable, Sukanya, the beautiful young daughter of a king, submitted herself to her old husband and tried to please him in all respects. Thus, she was a faithful and chaste wife. Okay, next verse. No.
Next verse is even worse.
This is... All right. Sorry for this. All right. Sukanya jaivanam prapya patim paramakopanam pranayam asachitagya apramatanu vrittibihi. All right. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, this reminds me of a conversation between Satyabhama and Draupadi. This is very interesting. This is from the Mahabharata. I'm going to show both sides of the equation. Don't worry, ladies. They're all going to run out of here crying after this class. So anyway, so once upon a time, there was a meeting between Satyabhama and Draupadi. And Satyabhama really wanted to know how Draupadi keeps her husband under control. I mean, how do you deal with five of them, right? You know, one is difficult enough. Of course, Satyabhama was married, perhaps to the most difficult person, Krishna. So how do you control the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So she asked Draupadi, what sort of womanly wiles do you use? Now, wiles means, let's say, in a simple word, tricks. You know, do you, let's say, put on certain earrings or smile in certain ways or decorate your hair in certain ways or move your eyebrows in certain ways? Like Vidbit or Gorilla. Anyway, how do you do it? And Draupadi sort of chastised her. She said, this is not a proper way to deal with things. Actually, the way I deal with my five husbands so that they listen to me is that I get up earlier than them every morning and I take rest after them. Does anyone remember this in the Mahabharata? It's very interesting. And in this way, by being submissive, and it's not just like a manipulative trick, then we have a nice relationship between myself and the five husbands. And they actually listen to her. So that's one side of the equation. Okay, got that out of the way. So the other side of the equation is these particular statements in the purport have to be understood according to time, place, and circumstance. And I'm going to give some examples of this. First of all, I'm going to tell the story from the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya giving prasadam to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was inviting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for prasadam. And, of course, he prepared quite a bit of prasadam. It's described at least 10 times the amount that an ordinary person could eat. So that's part of the story. And so what happened is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had a son-in-law by the name of Amoga. And this son-in-law was quite envious. Son-in-law means that he was married to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's daughter, Sati. So he was quite envious. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya did not want to see this amoga around when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking prasadam. In fact, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya basically stood by the door, guarding the door. But he was also serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was a little inattentive at a particular juncture. And Sarvabhauma and Amoga got into the room, and he was watching Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat. And he said, "This sannyasi is eating as much as 10 men, or it has much prasadam here, as 10 men, and he's supposed to be renounced." And so when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya heard this, he immediately ran after Amoga to beat him with a stick, and of course, because of Amoga was much younger than Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was able to escape from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was completely upset, considering that he had committed an offense to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or been part of committing an offense to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya was laughing. Lord Chaitanya said, "What is wrong? You know, actually, I was eating that much." And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, of course, Lord Chaitanya tried to appease Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and then Lord Chaitanya eventually left, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was thinking, what should be done with this amoga? And he was thinking, well, if someone commits an offense, they should be killed, because we don't do that. We'd have to be killing a lot of people, cutting out a lot of tongues, you know, doing things that are not so socially acceptable. So, but he thought, amoga is a Brahmin. So you really shouldn't be killing Brahmin. That's actually sinful. Just like the story of Ashwatthama. He shouldn't have been killed. The proper punishment was cutting the jewel and, you know, sending him away. And so he thought, well, therefore, my daughter should be considered no longer to have a husband. In other words, marriage finished completely. Of course, it wasn't divorce. They didn't go to the divorce court or anything like that. But marriage finished. And so then there was the statement that if a husband is not fallen, then he should not be rejected. But if a husband is fallen, or if a husband, I mean, I'm adding some things to this, which are not in the CC, but if a husband is abusive, we're not suggesting that you stay with someone who is going to abuse you and you just simply tolerate it being codependent with the situation. But in the case of Sukanya and Chaivanamuni, you know, he was irritable but not abusive. He just had a little bad temper. And he eventually did calm down. And eventually, as we're reading, we'll read at the end of the story, she got a young husband who wasn't irritable. Actually, Prabhupada also said, one time he was joking, and he was chastised a disciple. He says, yeah, when you get old, you get irritable. It's true. I experienced that. Get irritable. Not so tolerant. So anyway, so of course there's a happy ending to the story because this Amoga, he got cholera because he had offended Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's not the happy ending. There's more to the story, of course. And then he was lying in his bed with, I guess, a high fever, getting ready to die. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was really happy about it. He said, you know, Krishna's taking care of it. You know, we couldn't. I think he quoted a verse from the Mahabharata. Yeah. Like, we couldn't accomplish the Gandharvas or something that accomplished.
That was Bhima was quoting the Gandharvas attacked
Duryodhana. Yeah, they captured Duryodhana. Yeah, that was that whole story when Duryodhana went to harass the Pandavas. And they were captured by this Gandharva. Chitra something. I forget the... Chitra something that I forget. What? What's it?
Chitaratha,
yeah. The burnt chariot. Because Arjuna had previously burnt his chariot, so therefore he was called Chitaratha. So, anyway, what we couldn't accomplish, Gandharvas have accomplished. So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very happy. Oh, this is fantastic what's happened. But Lord Chaitanya understood that if a moga died, it would be equivalent to, like, killing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would be a disaster for the family. And so he went up to where a moga was. He put his hand on the chest of a moga and he says, envy should not exist in the heart of a Brahmin. Chant Hare Krishna. And so moga started chanting Hare Krishna, got up, got repentant, and even started slapping his face, isn't it? He said, with his mouth, I have blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why did you save him? It would have been better had he died. So anyway, so there was an instance, that's the reason I'm telling that story, is that's an instance where in a particular situation, the wife, when the wife's family rejects the husband. And so then, more stories, just to illustrate my point. As far as submission is concerned, you know, you hear this word submissive, the wife must be submissive, and you just think that she's just like rolling on the ground, begging like a dog, you know, like dogs are submissive. There's this interesting word in English, obsequious, right? Which means always trying to please. And that, like when you come home at night and the dog is there, the dog brings in your slippers. Of course, you shouldn't do that. And the wife just has to be quiet and stay in the kitchen rolling chapatis all the time and not speak unless spoken to. You know, there's this conception of that's what submissive means. And you hear devotees use these particular verses and purports out of context to be abusive towards their wives, saying, you're supposed to be submissive. You're supposed to be like Sita Devi. And the wife should say, you know, you're supposed to be like Ram, but you're like Ravan. So let me tell you a story. Some stories, all right, from the Ramayana, now that we're talking about Sita Devi. Okay, so you picture Sita Devi just really, really submissive, not giving Lord Ram any advice. Well, she does. If you read the Valmiki Ramayana, there's several instances of this. They're in the forest, and Lord Ram has been given the duty to protect the sages from the Rakshasas, and he has his bow out, and he's going to kill all these Rakshasas, and eventually, you know, the whole story of the Ramayana. So Sita Devi says, I don't think you should be carrying this bow around. And Ram says, why? She said, because if you have a bow in your hand, you're going to use it, and some innocent, she was even feeling compassion for the Rakshasas, the innocent Rakshasas and other people are going to be hurt. And she tells a story, she's preaching to Lord Ram. She tells a story about Indra and a sage. Do you remember the story? Interesting. Now I know something, Maharaj, doesn't it? With its photographic memory. So anyway, so here's the story. Indra generally gets upset when he sees sages performing austerities, right? He thinks they want to take over the heavenly kingdom. You know, if he sees Ashwamedha sacrifices, he tries to stop you from doing 100. So with sages, he has different strategies. I mean, the main strategy Indra uses with sages is he sends some girl down. Some apsara, like in the case of Vishwamitra Muni and Menaka, right? And then Vishwamitra Muni was so determined to become a Brahma Rishi that when the girl came down, he just went, boom, forget about it. And as a result, Shakuntala was born. Anyway, the whole story in the Bhagavatam. So, but he has other strategies too, like stealing horses. But in this particular case, he saw the sage. The sage was really peaceful. So he thought, how to break the sage's austerities? And so he came down to the earth planet, and he gave the sage a bow. And guess what? After a while, the sage, you know, if you have a bow in your hand, just like you see in America, the guns are so prominent and prevalent, right? And people think guns don't kill. Well, people kill. But you put gun in people's hands. I remember when I was young that we would play with guns. Isn't it? In America, we played, maybe you did. Toy
guns. I don't know. We had toy guns.
Yeah, I had toy guns. I had real guns, too. But we, you know, practically the first thing when you're born, you're given a gun in America. I mean, probably even had water pistols, two of them. So nowadays, it's not advisable because if the police see a toy gun, sometimes they shoot at you. So, but, you know, as soon as we got these guns in our hand, or hands, shoot, bang, you're dead. Do you remember that? And we had caps. Caps would mean little explosive devices on the gun. Boom, boom. And we would play cowboys and Indians and shoot each other. This is America, you know. What do you do when as a kid, you know, you shoot each other? Nice culture. So the point is, as soon as you put a weapon in someone's hand, then you start to think about it and use it. Simple psychology. And Sita Devi said that to Ram, that, look, you're going to use it inappropriately. So she's preaching to Ram. She's not just saying, you know, saying nothing. She's preaching to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Ram is listening to her because he didn't follow her instructions. But still, it was a back and forth relationship. It wasn't, you know, bow down, Mrs. Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. Anyway. It was back and forth. And even at the end of the Ramayana, I'm talking about the Valmiki Ramayana, that's the bona fide Ramayana. I mean, in India, they read the Tulsidas Ramayana, Ramacharita Manasas, which Prabhupada said has a tinge of Mayavad philosophy in it. But the Valmiki Ramayana is a beautiful work. It's like 100,000 verses. So what happens at the end of the Ramayana is that Sita Devi has been gone to the ashram of Valmiki Muni, right? She's living there. She gives birth to Lavan Kush. And after a long period of time, Valmiki Muni goes to Ram, and he says, I think you should accept Sita Devi back. I mean, she's been chased. Don't worry, I can attest to her chastity. Okay, nice. And so then she comes back, and Ram says to her, I'm not going to accept you back unless you make a public declaration as to your chastity. You know, after all this time, she's been chased to Lord Ram, and she thinks of no one but Ram. So you think, you know, submission, jaya shishi, panchatattva ki jaya. So you think, submission, okay, fine. So what she says is, I've had enough of this. Enough is enough. And she says, Mother, and she's calling the earth goddess at this particular point. Mother, take me away from this terrible place. So here's separation. Of course, I understand it's the Lord's pastimes. I understand the separation between the Lord and his consort is never actually separation. That's Vipralamba. I understand all those things philosophically. But I'm looking at it from a different level. So she says, take me away from this horrible place. And then if I have never thought of anyone else other than Ram, let the earth open up and take me away. And so all of a sudden there's rumbling. The earth opens up like an earthquake. I mean, it's worse than an earthquake. And the earth goddess comes up and she says, daughter, come with me away from this place. Whoops. Bunkuru. Hey, that's Hindi, I'm sorry. So, and she goes away. So the separation there. Because she couldn't tolerate it anymore. I mean, I know it's a pastime. But she couldn't tolerate it anymore. So, you know, you have to look at these different instructions in context. Even Mandodari. You know, you have these lists. Whenever you do a marriage, you have these lists of most chaste women, like Lakshmi and Ryan. You also have Ravana Mandodari, who is, Mandodari is Ravana's wife. And she is giving Ravana advice. Because unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, Ravana doesn't take her advice and send back Sita Devi. So, you know, you have to really take these, the point I'm making, you have to take these particular instructions in context, you know, in the context right here, and try to understand how to apply things according to time, place, and circumstance. So, all you ladies, don't get too scared. And there's other stories, too. I can't think of any other stories, but I'm sure there are other stories, too, where wives gave their husbands advice. Yeah, Gandhari and Dhritarashtra. I mean, there's so many stories. So many stories. Of course, in an ideal situation where you got a really nice husband, I mean, Chaivana Muni was a nice husband. He wasn't bad. He was just irritable. He wasn't abusive. He was just irritable. There's a difference. So you... what, he's irritable? No, he's submissive. So anyway, there's a different nature. Female nature is different than male nature. That's the point. I mean, no matter how much we attempt to equalize both the natures, there are different natures. Generally, when I'm advising people who are getting married, I mean, I don't talk about submission. I ask them to read this one book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, so they can understand the different natures of men and women. And men, fortunately or unfortunately, they like to dominate. And if they protect the woman properly, the natural woman psychology will manifest itself. So, anyway, I hope I got myself out of trouble. So, any questions or comments about any of these points? Maharaj, you have anything to add?
Well, I think nowadays they're teaching the men to be submissive. At least in America, I don't know about Europe. But
in America, there's a problem with the men being dominated by the ladies and not being able to say what they actually want to say.
Well, that's not good either.
No, I mean, that's...
That's not good either. The actually, Prabhupada said that marriage is a partnership. There should be friendship there between the husband and wife, and they should both be dedicated to the goal of becoming Krishna conscious. And that's a good combination. Prabhupada also said, when the husband and wife don't argue, the goddess of fortune is there, isn't it? You don't even have to work or find a job. All you do is don't argue, which is probably impossible. But anyway.
Yeah, Prabhupada, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the marriage of Devahuti
and Kardama.
You know, Prabhupada shows from many different angles what the relationship between the husband and the wife should be. You know, from the spirit, as you mentioned, the spiritual angle. But then he also mentions that the nature should be compatible, that the woman and the man should both have the same nature, the same character and taste, he says. If they both have the same character and taste, then the marriage will be happy. But if there are different tastes and different characters, then generally speaking, there's conflict there. And Prabhupada even suggests that, because although he reverses it later on in the same canto. But he even suggests that before marriage there should be some compatibility, astrological compatibility, because Prabhupada just takes one little part of the compatibility. He says the Rakshasa and the Manusha and the Deva. He said if they're both equal in character and taste, then the marriage will be very happy and successful. But if they're different, if one is Rakshasa, the other one's Deva, then generally it's incompatible. Although, astrologically, it's not totally the complete picture. But
yeah, that's very good. And so, of course, there's also considerations, you know, pratilom and anulom.
Yeah, so many considerations.
That you can have a higher caste man marry a lower caste woman, but not vice versa. And then you have the situation, there's another interesting story from the Ramayana, where the Rakshasas, they were thinking of a way to overcome the Devas, and they weren't so powerful at that particular time. So they wanted to crossbreed a powerful Brahmin with a powerful Rakshasini. You know, this crossbreeding. So that they have a Brahma-Rakshasa. So there was this sage, his name was Vishravas. And Vishravas was also the father of Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods. I'd like to be one of his sons. But anyway, like Mani Grivam, Nala Kuvera. So he was the father of Kuvera, and he had his ashram. This is an interesting story from the Ramayana, because I read the Valmiki Ramayana many times. And so he had his ashram, all the nice brahmacharis there, Guru Maharaj. What happened is the Rakshasas decided to send this Rakshasa lady, Kekasi, to lure him and get him to have children. So she arrives at the ashram and she says, Vishravas, I love you. You know, loving words. She wasn't a submissive wife. And he said, this would not be appropriate since I'm a Brahmin and you're a Rakshasini. And she said, well, love is transcendental. Love transcends all these things. So, to tell a long story short, they got married, or whatever, and all the brahmacharis got upset because their guru had married a Rakshasini. Can you imagine that? You know, you have a nice Guru Maharaj. She's not a sannyasi, obviously. And all of a sudden, he's married to this Rakshasini. And so they leave. So he's left alone with her. And they start to have children. And of course, the first child was Ravan. Second child was Kumbhakarna. And then there's Vibhishan. And a nice little girl, Sirpanaka. So that's what happens sometimes when you have a mixed marriage. You get a very powerful Rakshasa, or Rakshasa and Rakshasinis as children. Anybody else have a question? A non-controversial question. Yes?
Thank you for the class, dear Maharaj. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that a wife should tolerate also a husband who is by nature cruel. So those are not only like irritable, but cruel. The cruel word is a little bit...
But maybe not cruel, maybe not cruel to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Prabhupada would want someone in a situation where they're being abused. I mean, one has to understand things in their particular context. You know, cruel, or he's beating her, he's torturing her. No. There's no way.
It could be understood in that way by just simply reading that verse, that purport. It
yeah.
could be misunderstood.
It could be misunderstood, yeah. So, any other questions or comments? Yes. Non-controversial questions. Like, how do you become Krishna conscious? Actually, another way we're going to... How do you chant the holy name? Another way we can understand this. I was also thinking, about this verse in relationship to the relation between the guru and the disciple. That, what is that verse? Narada Muni says, Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasandanta Guror Hitam Archayandasavan Nicho. The Brahmachari lives at the place of the spiritual master. And sometimes the wife or the wife's relationship with the husband is compared metaphorically with the disciple's relationship with the guru. Not in a conjugal way, of course. But in the fourth canto, it's also like that. So, in the story, the Paranjana story. So, Vasandanta Gurohitam, the disciple, this, you know, cannot be, this story can be understood in terms of the disciple and spiritual master. The disciple lives at the ashram of the spiritual master. Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasandanta Gurohitam, which is really important. He works for the benefit of the guru. His whole life is absorbed in the benefit of the guru. And he has good behavior. And dasavan, what is dasavan? He's full of service. Dasavan nicho. So, anyway, I also understood this in a metaphoric way, this particular verse in purport, as a relationship between guru and disciple. Okay? Submissive disciple. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the lecture, Maharaj. Sometimes, at least for me, maybe it's hard to distinguish between the difference between being submissive toward the wife or offering to serve the wife. If you give some example or...
I mean, the husband should serve the wife should serve the husband. It should be mutual service. I remember there's some story with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. The husband... Here's a contrary story. The husband and the wife approached Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj for instruction upon getting married. They said, you know, what should we do? What should our relationship be? And he said, you should serve your wife. Remember that story? You should just serve your wife. Because no one should think that they're master. If someone thinks they're master, they're fallen. Like if someone who takes the position or service of guru thinks they're guru, they're guru. One should always remember in Krishna consciousness that we're servants of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. So the attitude in marriage should not be, you know, not the people should read this particular verse and think, boy, now I really want to get married so I can get a submissive wife. Of course, they'll discover, it's like the story of, sorry about this joke. It's like the story of Pulambasura. My, how this carrier has changed. You know the Krishna book? So people have this expectation, you know, this unrealistic expectation. They're going to have a wife who's submissive, just bows down to them like the dog. And it turns out to be the opposite. So they should have the attitude that you're both supposed to serve each other in Krishna consciousness. Now, the husband has specific duties, you know, protecting the wife, and usually economic development. But they should be thinking of rendering service to each other. Daso smi, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he received, someone offered him obeisances, he would respond, Daso smi. That means, I am your servant. Instead of, here's my blessings. Because, you know, dealing with Indian congregation a lot, you know, you got to keep your hand up like that all the time. Blessings, blessings, blessings. Bless my car, bless my wife, bless my mobile phone, you know. My children, touch them on the head. But he would say, Daso, it's me. I'm your servant. So there has to be that attitude. So we really have to understand how to apply, because how to apply these things in context. As I pointed out, there are sometimes stories that illustrate perhaps the opposite or temper what's being said in this particular verse and purport. So just become a servant. You get married, then you serve your wife, you protect her. You protect the children. Actually, Vedic culture means protection of women, children, cows, and this is the one I like, old people. And I'm old. Isn't it? That's very, without that, I mean, if you're cruel to a woman, even if she's your wife, then you're violating Vedic culture. Remember that. Okay. Okay, I think I got myself out of this one. I hope. I hope. Don't give me any more of these verses. You know, just... I like verses like, you're not the body, your spirit soul.
Next year we'll consider.
I mean, before I decide to come here, just tell me what part of the Bhagavatam you're in. It always happens like this.
Next year will be the Rasa dance. Rasa. Next year will be the Rasa dance.
Rasa dance. Okay, that's, I can deal with that one. I can deal with the unsubmissive gopis. You know, the left-handed gopis. I can deal with Satyabhama nagging Krishna. Right? She nagged Krishna. You got that Rukmini, a Parijata flower. You got to get me a Parijata plant. So Krishna had to fight off all the demigods just to get the Parijata, because he was nagged by his wife. So there's that other side of it, too. Isn't it? And Krishna didn't consider it that bad. He loved it. He loves it when his when the gopis, the left-handed gopis or his wives, are unsubmissive. It's tasty for Krishna. Isn't it? You got different rasas there. So even in married life, it's tasty sometimes. What can I say? Krishna shows that by example, isn't it? He loves Satyabhama. Satyabhama is an expansion of Srimati Radharani.
He said that all the wives of Krishna, all 16,108, believe that Krishna was a henpecked husband.
See?
No, the wives know how to enter into the heart and control the husband, but the husband knows how to enter into the wife's heart and control them also.
Yeah, it's a reciprocal controlling. They both control by love. And, you know, they show love in different ways. Husband by protecting, giving plenty of saris. That's what Prabhupada said, isn't it? You got to get plenty of saris. And bangles. Sorry, I left that one out. Bangles and saris. Anyway, so one has to apply these things according to time, place, and circumstance. You know, don't take these things out of context. Any other questions, please? Save me. Questions? Comments? No? Wow. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Gī Jāya.